Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On reflection, rewatching it again, I actually upped my Letterboxd score because I enjoyed it so much more this time round, and I thoroughly agree that it is a masterpiece. And yeah, I had a lot of fun watching it this time round. And we talk about like Oscar snubs a lot, but like this is hands down one of my favourite Oscar wins of the most recent years.
I really loved it the first time, but what if it doesn't hit the second time? With a movie like this, it just blows your mind when you watch it. And it's like, can it blow your mind again? Like, I agree with Helen, I think it was even better.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Flixwatcher Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Chris.
Hello.
Em.
Hello.
And Helen.
Hi.
And we're going to be talking about Parasites. Thank you, as always, to Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and to Ben from Rockwood Audio for editing this podcast episode and all the ones beforehand and all the ones in the future. Please do remember to head over to Spotify and Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and a glowing review. And if you want to join us on social media, we are on Twitter at FlixWatcherPod or on Instagram at FlixWatcher.
Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. Our guests today are Chris and Em. Over to you, please, Em, to say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hello, everyone. My name is Em and I host the film history podcast Verbal Diorama. And I'm so happy to be back on FlixWatcher. Thanks so much for having me back.
Whoop, whoop!
Yay!
What episodes were you on before? So people can scroll back in the feed if they like your voice.
Oh, yeah. Oh gosh, I've got to remember. I was on with Claire for...
We had Howl's Moving Castle.
Howl's Moving Castle. I was going to get the title wrong. Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, I believe was the other one.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Both two lovely films.
Very, very fun films, and so happy to be back.
Fun films? I'm not sure about for Never, Rarely.
Well,
but...
maybe not one of them. Maybe one of them more fun than the other, but yeah.
A fun time was had.
Yes.
A fun time was had. Tell us about Verbal Diorama.
Oh, yeah, of course. I probably should, shouldn't I? Yeah, so Verbal Diorama is a film history podcast. So every episode, every week, I look into the history and legacy of a particular film, a particular set of films. And I've been doing that for 5 years now and just recently hit 250 episodes of the podcast as well. So,
wow. Woo!
It's going really well. It's a lot of work. It's an incredibly busy show, but yeah, I love what I do. And because of what I do, I get to guest on other people's podcasts. So it's a lot of fun, just very, very labour intensive. So it's nice to come on a podcast like this where you can watch a movie and just talk about it.
Podcasting ain't easy, kids.
Don't try
this at home.
Leave it to the pros.
Hold on, are the pros doing this? Are people getting paid to do this? Chris, who are you? We've heard your voice now.
I host a podcast called Easy Riders Raging Podcast.
And what's that about? That's a very fancy name.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a great name because it's based on the classic book, Easy Riders Raging Bulls. And we look at films and TV, and each series is a different decade. So we did a series on the 50s, series on the 60s, one on the 70s. And we're currently just discussing all things big and small from the 80s. That's the current run.
I think everyone here is an 80s kid, aren't they? This is the bit where if you get this wrong, Chris, we will have to burn you on the stake.
I mean, I can neither confirm nor deny if I was alive in the 80s.
He confirmed, guys, just not audibly. We're here talking about your choice, which is Parasite. Chris, can you tell us first of all why you chose it? And then I'll give you 60 seconds or less to give us the synopsis.
I think this is one of the best films of the last few years. I was going to say it was one of the best of the 20s and then saw it only came out everywhere else in 2019, but it's just a really, really, really great drama.
Fair enough. And I guess he wants to revisit it.
Very succinct.
Timer for the synopsis starts now.
Sure. So yeah, like I say, it's a Korean drama about a poor family who are the Kims, who basically find themselves infiltrating the home of a wealthy family, the Parks. And strange and dark turns occur.
Fair play. Guys, yeah. When was the last time you watched this? Did you watch it first in the cinema? Gonna go to Helen first.
The last time I watched this was in the cinema in 2019. But I was super, super hyped to be watching it again. It was one of the ones that sometimes we'll send like a list out with some titles on that haven't been picked because sifting through 300 episodes. It's been on the list and it went out to a few people and it was very much like, who is going to take the Parasite bait? So well done.
But yeah, between now and then, thoughts?
Between now and then, my thoughts were, when is bloody Mickey 17 going to come out? That's what I want to know. That's my thoughts.
Taking the Mickey 17?
It is taking the Mickey. It was like a gateway for me. I don't know whether... I'm trying to think what I'd seen by the director, which we were discussing. Like,
with Okja.
I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, we'd had Okja. We'd had Okja and Snowpiercer, so kind of like the American ones. But I've since seen a lot more. So I've now seen The Host and I've seen Mother and I've seen Memories of Murder as well. I think they're kind of like the main ones and there's possibly a couple of others there that I haven't seen. But on reflection, rewatching it again, I actually upped my Letterboxd score because I enjoyed it so much more this time round. And I thoroughly agree that it is a masterpiece. And yeah, I had a lot of fun watching it this time round. And we talk about like Oscar snubs a lot, but like this is hands down one of my favourite Oscar wins of the most recent years. To go in as kind of like not necessarily an outsider, definitely not in the international picture, but to pick up director, picture and original screenplay and best international picture is quite a win for it. And it also gave us that quote, which I can't remember now, but it's to do with
the
one inch barrier of subtitles.
Yeah.
Which is lovely.
Em, had you seen it before?
I had. I didn't see it at the cinema. I saw it when it came onto streaming and it came very highly recommended from a friend of mine who was like, you have to see this movie. You have to see it.
Is your friend the Oscar? Is your friend called Oscar?
He might as well be.
Mr. Academy.
But yeah, because I've seen... So the only Bong Joon-ho film that I'd seen previous was Snowpiercer. And I loved Snowpiercer. I just think it's an absolutely terrific movie. I think it's so underrated. And everyone who asks me, like, you know, what kind of action movie should I watch that I probably haven't seen, I always recommend Snowpiercer because no one in the UK seems to know it. I think it's probably because it was never really released here.
Well, it was on Netflix for a bunch. And the TV show's come out as well since.
Yeah, it didn't get a cinema release. So I saw Snowpiercer out in Australia for some bizarre reason. Yeah, so I loved Snowpiercer and I was like, this director's going places. And then, yeah, so a friend of mine said, oh, there's this buzz about this movie Parasite, you've got to watch it. And I watched it the first time and I was totally blown away by it. And I really loved it, but I've never watched it again. And I said to him, I was like, oh, I'm going on FlixWatcher and we're talking about Parasite. And I said to him, I was like, I'm a bit apprehensive because I really loved it the first time, but what if it doesn't hit the second time? Because I feel like with a movie like this, it just blows your mind when you watch it. And it's like, can it blow your mind again? Like, can it? Obviously, we'll go into like, you know, the value of a second watch, but I was just... I agree with Helen. I think it was even better the second time because I picked up so many more visual clues, so many more little nuances that maybe I didn't notice before. And this movie slaps. Like, I agree, masterpiece. I don't think there's any other way you can describe it other than Bong Joon-ho makes excellent movies. The Host, like Helen said, I think is great as well. I haven't seen any of the others, but yeah, masterpiece. It's great.
Masterpiece, Chris?
Yeah, I was going to say, if I can recommend one other film by him, because they're all great, Memories of Murder is so, really so good.
I've heard good things.
Like it's like Zodiac, but even better. It's very similar, but it is even better. When Zodiac is a masterpiece itself, so it's, you know, masterpiece sandwich kind of affair. Yeah, I watched this at the cinema and I hadn't seen this since up until this week. But I did during the pandemic. I did fill in the gaps in the director's sort of filmography. I went back to renting DVDs through post during the pandemic.
So that still is a thing, is it? Well, it was a thing, I guess, then.
It wasn't the service I was using, which was Love Film I used to use years ago. And it wasn't them, but it was somebody was doing the same service.
Sure.
And I used that to sort of track down some of the harder to find films. So I saw like Mother and Memories of Murder and Barking Dogs Don't Bite, I believe that's what it's called. And
yeah,
you know, the postal DVD service is good for films you can't track down necessarily on streaming. So that's a plug for them,
or illegally.
We wouldn't do that. If you're looking, Curzon, BFI and Mubi quite often have a rotation. So you can always check those ones.
See, none of those are Netflix. Why are we talking about, guys? Hey, stop this. We're talking about films on Netflix. This is one of the films. So when you said that it came highly recommended, for me, this is like, there was like a million or an infinite number of megaphones pointing at my head, screaming at the same time, you must watch Parasite, you must watch Parasite, you must watch Parasite. And so it's just like film Twitter, internet, everything. Everyone was just saying, how come you haven't watched Parasite yet, you fucking idiot? And me in my Kobe ways, I don't know, get on my little sandbox going, no, it's not going to be as good as everyone says. Test me, film. This most recently happened also with Past Lives, where everyone in the world was saying, no, you got to watch it. And I was like, no, you impressed me, you film. So Parasite and Past Lives, the first watch I was like, I mean, I think it's good. I think it's great. But the second watch for Parasite was like where you can just relax into the film. This is my second time watching it. You can just relax into the film and let the things happen. Between then and now, I'd watched lots of YouTube clips about the, you know, the cinematography and defining lines between the rich and the poor in many different ways in the film, and how the score works together, and the kind of Chekhovian points that are made in the film. So I was looking out for a lot of those in the film. I guess on this rewatch, the thing that kind of, not irked me, but I was like, all four members of the family getting into the same house, isn't that a bit silly? And another point, which was when the Parks went on their camping trip and they had a party in their house, I was like, guys, come on. But this is like, this is then trying to take it too seriously, because then it does, obviously there's lots of fun to be had in this kind of heist where they're infiltrating themselves into the Parks' lives. And there's lots of fun to be had with, you know, the hijinks that happens. Feel sad for the people that lost their jobs as well. And I was like, oh, they're poor now as well. But then obviously you're following these guys who are fun, and the part, and Mr. Kim, the patriarch of the household, is just such a fantastic presence on screen, right? His face and his smile, and his, when he's not smiling, you just feel everything that you see. And it's, there's a one line after the flood where Mrs. Park was driving in the car and she's like, oh, thank God for the rain. And his house has just been devastated. Yeah. And you just see on his face then how the disparity between those two people, even though they're separated by like less than a foot at that point, is just cavernous. And he's just a great, great on-screen presence. And for him alone, it's a fantastic film, and it begs to be watched many, many times. Another thing before I pass to you guys, you can't watch this on Netflix in the English version. There's no English version, so you have to navigate that one-inch barrier. And I think that's all the better for it, 100%.
Agreed, 100%.
Mm-hmm. What about the twists and turns, even though we knew it this time? How did it work this time versus last time, the first time, those twists?
Well, I think the first time you watch this movie, the twists and turns, they really come out of nowhere. And they almost kind of jolt you a little bit, because you're like, what's going on? Like, oh my God. Like, there's that one scene in particular where they're talking about the little boy who goes down and eats his cake at night. And she's talking about the seizure that he had. And then you just see the kind of, it's almost like glowing green eyes of the man kind of coming up from the cellar. And that kind of image is just so visceral, and it's just kind of stuck in my mind. But even now, like watching it again, it still kind of jolted me a little bit, because I was like, I've seen this movie, like I know what's going to happen, but it was still sharp. And I think that's down to, I mean, this movie is so incredibly well written. The characters are so well written. The story is so well crafted that I think literally everything that happens it's such a well-crafted, like, visual story, but also a narrative story. Because I think, you know, both of those, the visuals and the narrative, kind of complement each other. But even things like when you realise that there's a man down in the cellar, and you realise that kind of you've got these two almost identical situations going on that you never really fully appreciated what was actually happening. Little things that really kind of got to me was all of the time you're watching this movie and every single time the Park family walk up their stairs and the lights come on, you assume it's a sensor.
Mm.
And then you realise there's this guy who's literally like switching the lights, and he's
Morse
so fanatical.
Or, yeah. Coding,
yeah.
Messages.
And he's so fanatical about this family that he's like, this is the master. Like, I am doing everything for this one man because I love him so much, and I am turning on his lights. And I just, yeah, a movie like this, I think one of the things that I wrote in my notes was, this is a fantastic example of why any, not just Korean cinema, but any foreign cinema should not be remade in Hollywood, because I don't think that Hollywood can do this. And I know that sounds weird because you're like, well, Hollywood makes movies all the time. But there's something about the nuances of Korean cinema specifically, I feel, because I've watched a handful of Korean movies and I love all of them. But there's something about the nuances of Korean cinema that Hollywood executives just would not understand. And I think they would focus on the wrong thing.
That wouldn't stop them, though. That's not going to stop them remaking it.
Yeah, are you saying you don't want to see Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus as the Parks?
Are you just taking that from that film? I can't remember. With the Avalanche.
The snowy one, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
It's called.
Well, you know, the remake was in the pipeline in 2020 and we've not seen it yet. So maybe we've escaped that one.
Helen, it's going to hit you when you least expect it.
I know. I just... It's like, don't remake stuff just because. Like, there's a perfectly good movie here. It's called Parasite. It's what we're talking about. Hollywood does not need to remake this. And if they do, then they've missed the point. They've missed the point entirely, because I don't think you can remake this. They
miss the point. They miss the point all the time.
No, I know. That is the point. They miss the point.
Chris, any twists and turns that you want to pull out from this rewatch that you, or any deeper understandings of the film this time compared to the last time for you?
The bit where they discover the secret staircase, it's electric. I fancy myself sort of quite a seasoned film watcher, and I'm always like, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. And so I'd pretty much predicted the film was going to be kind of a riff on The Magic Finger by Roald Dahl, where essentially I was like, the poor people, they're going to take the house, the rich people are going to be out. I figured that was how it was going to go, because there were some red herrings to make you think that. But the point where you discover this staircase, it's like the moment in Psycho after the shower sequence, where you're like, I've no idea what's happening. And it's you can just feel it in your veins, just like, what is going on here? And it's just, it's incredible to watch. And it still had the same vibes on the rewatch, you know, that kind of like, can't take your eyes off of it. Like a ride, we're going down the ride.
Mm.
So yeah, I still really enjoyed it. Still moved, still entertained. You know, laughing, wanting to. And in fact, everyone seems to say it's gotten better since they watched it the first time. And I think a possible effect of that is just like it's become more apt. Like the pandemic widened the wealth gap in a lot of countries, and this is about that horrible gap. And so it's become more apt with time. And God knows how bad it'll be next time I watch this film. That's a cheery note, isn't it?
Anything else, points you want to make before we head to the scores?
Neither of the families are out and out bad. Like, it's not that the poor Bat family are good, rich family bad, or vice versa. There's a nuance to it, that they're both kind of flawed. Neither of them are evil. The evil, in fact, is the society that they live in. It's capitalism.
Helen.
Yeah, so we've talked about, like, no one saw a previous maid hiding husband who's on the run from his gambling debts in a secret hidden compartment under the house where she's feeding him the two meals, which is why she eats a lot. Mm. But then, like, you're always kind of I was sort of wondering, like, when, you know, Chekhov's magic rock was going to come into play. And yeah, the scene, the kind of like surprise birthday party, you kind of get the feeling that there's something that is going to come back round from the history, but quite the how the party ends up with just kind of the full-on slaughter and complete insanity of a party gone extremely bad kind of takes it to the even more wilder levels, which I think is a bit of a trademark. And I particularly enjoyed that. But yeah, definitely on the rewatch, you can kind of like pick up little things here and there. And I also wanted to say, like, the level they go to be on the Blag is just admirable. Like when she's photoshopping the certificates with the, like, the fake authenticity badge and stuff like that, it's just, I just love how committed they are to this. And the whole getting the current made out with the peach and the steps that they go to, that, like, the timing that's required for their plan to come to fruition to get all of the family in is just admirable, but also quite evil. And that's like that kind of balance between them where you're on their side because they're poor, they're living in an alley basically where some guy is pissing on their house every night. They want to do better, they want to have good jobs, but they kind of don't want to work properly for them. They just want to like get the jobs without really putting in much work. But they're not bad because they're kind of, you know, we kind of like them. So it's that real like balance of the good guys and the bad guys, and it's just so hard to tell, which I really love in his films.
Let's head to the scores.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have included fellow Stripped Media family members Martin and Sam from Song by Song, and Kobe from Flixwatcher, and Dave from The Wire Stripped. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
So welcome to the Flixwatcher scores. The scores are still out of five, and you can still have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, please, Chris, with your recommendability.
Oh, easy five. It was one of those films, like, when I saw it, it was everyone I met, I was like, you've got to see this film. 5, 5, 5.
Em?
I have to agree. I think it's a five. It was recommended to me. I was very happy it was. And I, in turn, now recommend this to other people. I think if you want an introduction to Korean cinema, I think this is a great place to start. And I think, hopefully, once someone has seen this and got past that one-inch barrier of subtitles, then there's a whole brilliant, it's not even a genre of cinema, but, you know, a whole wealth of cinema from Korea out there that is kind of then open to you. So I think this is easy five.
Helen?
Yeah, I think this is probably like my gateway drug to Korean cinema. Like, this definitely sort of opened up things.
It's good that you got there. Jonathan Ross introduced me to Korean cinema with Old Boy. Okay, I'm sorry, I hijacked your time.
I have seen that, but that was a long time ago. This is like more definitely just kind of whether I'm more aware of different films, but definitely like, I was thinking like, should I mark this down because it is subtitles? I'm like, you know what? Absolutely no. It is so recommendable. And even if you don't want to read the subtitles, you're going to have to because there isn't a dub version. So you're just going to have to get over yourself and do it. And this is going to be the film for it. And then after it, you're just going to want to see more Korean cinema. So I'm also going to give it a five.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 4.5. I think it's definitely, I don't like to say masterpiece, but it's definitely a thrill ride. And there's escalations upon escalations upon escalations, which kind of together may seem far-fetched, but each step and turn is a logical kind of step, like from all the family infiltrating the parks and then finding the secret staircase and then like all them falling down and then the old housemaid and the guy in the basement realizing they're a family together to them somehow managing navigating out of that scenario. And then the party happening and the guy from the basement maiming half the party and then killing the daughter, and then the dad of the Mr. Kim goes into the basement. There's a lot of things which are like, whoa, this is not far-fetched, but it's like there's a lot going on here, and it takes deftness to the storytelling, it takes deftness to the writing to make it as well pronounced a film as it has done. But it's not the Koreanness or the non-English aspects. I think there's just a lot going on here, which I think some people will be like, I don't get it. So 4.5 for that. Repeat viewing score, Chris.
4.5. I'm still really engaged by it, still really enthralled. Yeah, it's a hard film to criticise.
Is this your second watching of it, Chris?
Yes, it's great.
M.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go for, I think, a 4.25. And the reason for that is, as I said, like, loved watching it the first time. It's been a couple of years, and then obviously I've watched it again. It wouldn't be something I think that I would choose to kind of put on randomly, or, oh, I just want to watch a movie tonight, I'm just going to watch Parasite. It wouldn't be that for me. It would be something that I feel like you'd want an occasion to watch it. You know, you'd want to watch it with someone who's maybe not seen it, or
on your 50th birthday, Parasite Day.
Exactly.
Light a candle, we're watching Parasite.
Yeah.
But, you know,
birthday, Parasite Day.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be one that I'd just be like, oh, I want to watch something. Oh, no, I'll put Parasite on. It would be, I'd want to have a special day to watch Parasite again. So, yeah, mate, 4.25, I think, is fair. Like, I would watch it again, definitely, but not often, shall we say.
Helen.
I'm going to give it a good old solid 4. I really, really enjoyed this rewatch, and I would 100% watch it again, I think, in a couple of years.
Yeah, I'm going to join you on the 4. I will watch it multiple times, not often, and mainly because I quite liked the fact that I forgot quite a bit that happens, especially towards the end of the film. So I quite like that experience to relive some bits whilst knowing that some key plot points are happening. I just thought one thing that kind of made me a bit icky in this rewatch, how old is the oldest daughter in the Park family? Because that relationship with her and the tutor, I felt a bit...
Yeah, she's definitely under the age of 16, isn't she?
Yeah, I mean, I thought she was a little bit older, college kind of age.
Well, because he says,
when you say college, you mean UK college or US college?
Like 17, 18.
Well, he says that he'll ask her out when she goes to university or something.
Yeah, so she's not there yet, is she?
So she's not there yet. So I just assumed she was like 16 or under. Because she looks very young.
Yeah. She does. Anyway, small screen score, Chris.
I think solid 4. Like, it's a good-looking film. It's not, like, mind-blowing, but it's a solidly good-looking film, and it looked good on my small TV.
I think I'd agree with a 4. I don't think you need to have a big screen to appreciate this movie, but I think it certainly helps to have a big screen to appreciate this movie.
Well, we're talking big screen, we're talking cinema versus home viewing, when we say there's more screen.
Yeah, cinema. I would have liked to have seen it at the cinema, actually. But yeah, maybe it loses a little being at home, but not a great deal.
Helen.
So I was just looking that it's implied that he is 19 and she is 15.
Ooh.
So
in the 90s when we were kids, there's plenty of that stuff happening. But even then I was like, those guys that used to hang outside the school gates, I thought, you are really weird.
Any girls in your year all went out with people that were about 4 years older. That was the way it seemed to work, I think.
I mean, it's the classic teacher-student kind of holding the power relationship. So yeah, I don't think it's meant to be romantically implied. I think that's meant to be part of the kind of power dynamic, and the not only do they want that kind of power of being in the house and taking that over, they also want to hold power over the people there as well. So I think it's quite an interesting dynamic in that it's not too far that it's kind of obvious, but it's very kind of subtle in that.
Well, because you're also like, how much does he really like her? Because it's this, he's there under a false pretense and they're always playing an angle and like he likes the idea of it because it like kind of legitimizes him. It's very, a lot of ins, a lot of outs.
Is it also like a middle finger to his friend who introduced him in the first place as well?
Definitely. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I don't think he actually likes her that much. Like you say, I think it's a power thing. It's the fact that she's obviously wealthy. He's not. But then they have that conversation, don't they, about them getting married in the future and like the mother washing her future daughter-in-law's clothes. And the whole dream is living in a house like that, isn't it? And that's kind of where the ending comes in, which is a bit heartbreaking, where the son is like, oh yeah, dad, I'm going to buy this house and I'm going to set you free. And then you realise it's all a pipe dream, because it's like they want that fantasy. And the fantasy kind of includes that girl. But I don't think he ever actually liked her. I think it was just part of his wealth fantasy thing.
I think also part of it is there that it gives a better hold on the infiltration. I like the word, guys. I'm going to use it for a lot the next few weeks. But I think because I think if you as the tutor, if your tutee doesn't like you, then, you know, off you go. So that almost helps to guarantee the fact he keeps a job going if she's infatuated with him, more so than the fact that she's teaching him how to do English better. So it just helps his game.
And helps his self-esteem, because they don't seem like they have much as a family.
I don't think he's that fussed about that. I think he's just like, we need to sort our lives out. Let's get some more money in. And he has got this kind of long, he has got a bit of an interesting brain about him, because one of the things I loved the first time watching the film and again watching it this time was before he went for the first interview and lesson with the Parks, he said, I don't see this as a con. I can't remember the word he used. I'm going to university next year, and this is just an advance for that. So he has, in his mind, he's like, I'm doing this thing because this is where I'm going to get to. And essentially, I'm not the bad guy here. So he has this kind of fancy in his mind, whether you want to call it fancy or he thinks of things differently. He kind of absolves himself of wrongdoing.
It's more of an aspiration, isn't it? It's like, he's like, this is what I want to do eventually. So this is a stepping stone to get where I want to be, which in a way is kind of logical, but it's just, you know, kind of...
Yeah, I quite liked his thinking.
Yeah.
Even though that wouldn't get you out of prison.
No.
Helen, sorry, your small screen score.
So while I enjoyed watching this at the cinema, and I think you should always try and support smaller films and go and watch them in the cinema, I ended up watching this on an iPad because I was travelling, and like, I really, really enjoyed watching it on that as well. So I'm going to give it a 5.
I moved from the iPad through to my office space here, and I've got better speakers here. And one thing I noticed, and I'd forgotten how much after watching the film the first time, that I listened to the soundtrack just all the time, and the soundtrack is fantastic, guys. So I'm going to give it 4.5, because I think that 0.5 is like, that soundtrack is amazing in the cinema. I really, really was taken by it, and I have been listening to it again. It's been reignited in my Spotify playlist, and I'll go back to it for a while, but that works great in the cinema and better there than at home. 4.5 engagement score, Chris.
That's a good one. I haven't really thought about it. A 4.75.
You haven't thought about it. You've been on here before. You know the format, and I sent you notes last night.
I wanted to be in the moment, Kobe.
Sorry, what was it? 4.5?
4.75.
I'm going to go with a 4.5. I feel like this is a movie that you want to watch in one sitting, because I feel like you would get the most out of it in one sitting. But I also feel like it is a great movie, but there is a small possibility. Like, for example, when I was watching it, I quite happily paused it at a certain convenient location to go and make a drink and stuff like that. I don't feel like I would want to turn it off, but I do feel like it is best viewed in one sitting. So I would kind of quite like, for if someone's going to watch it, then kind of give yourself that 2 and a bit hours to watch it. Like, you don't want to kind of turn it off in the middle. You want to be fully engaged with it. So yeah, I think 4.5 is fair.
Helen, engagement score.
So I forgot that I wanted to say that there was a exhibition on at the V&A last year, and it was all about Korean haiku. I can't remember what it's called exactly, but it had the wig from Old Boy on display, and it also had the bathroom from Parasite on display, and you could go and take a selfie, and it looked like you were in the bathroom trying to get reception on your phone.
Oh, the bathroom in the Kim's house.
Yes, in the Kim's house, the teeny weeny bathroom. So that was nice. I enjoyed doing that. Nothing to do with engagement score, but it reminded me that I wanted to say that. Yeah, strong engagement. I mean, you've got to be super engaged in it so that you can read the subtitles so you know what's going on. So there is, if you're double screening or if you're messing about with something else, then you're going to miss quite a lot of the film. So with that, I'm going to give it a 5, I think. I was engaged with all of the crazy shit that was happening and also had to pay attention so I knew what was going on.
Let's give that a 5 as well. I think it needs to be, you need to be in it to be in it. You need to want to do it. And first of all, you need to be in it. And second of all, it's hard not to be drawn into what's going on. And when you start flagging, something like kicks up a notch and then it kicks up another notch and you can't switch off, I don't think. So that gives an overall score of 4.56250. Over 4s across the board. Lowest factor was the repeat viewing score.
It's pretty high. Which,
yeah, absolutely. It makes sense.
Has it made it into the top 10?
Well, when you've got a director whose name is Bong,
I don't think it has.
It's going to be high, Helen.
Oh, that's a good one. We like that.
Top 20, I reckon.
Yeah, it's not made a top 10. It's 10th film. It's currently The Big Lebowski with 4.67688.
I can't believe The Big Lebowski scored that low. Just saying.
You don't know what's above it. You don't know what's above it.
Nothing is above it. It's The Big Lebowski, Kobe. Nothing is above it.
If you want to see what's above it, guys, go to our website, flickswatcher.tv, and hit the scoreboard tab in the main menu, and you can see exactly what's above The Big Lebowski. Yes, well, let's head to Twitter. Listeners, if this is the first time you've listened to this podcast, or you've been listening for a while and you're not found us on Twitter, go there. We are at FlixWatcherPod. Go there because we talk about stuff on film in general, but also we ask you guys to give us your opinions on the films we're going to record. And nowadays, well, as we record this, we're giving away little pin badges, which we used to give to our hosts when we used to do this in person, but I found like a gajillion of them. So I thought, hold on, we can give them to our listeners who give us a nice tweet. So you're incentivized. So look out for a tweet saying something like, want to win an exclusive pin badge? Just retweet this and give us a review, including a 5-star rating for Parasite. And we'll announce our lucky winner in the show with Verbal Diorama in this case and Chris from ERR Podcast. We had one response for this. Only one people want to get the pin badge, I guess. Chris, you want to take it?
Well, yeah, I mean, they only need one review because it pretty much summed it all up. So this post, we're not calling them tweets anymore, came from the podcast Nobody Asked For.
What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, at Nobody Asked For, number 4, pod. They said, masterpiece is an understatement, and then gave 5 literal stars.
So by default, podcast Nobody Asked For, guys, send us an email and we'll send your pin badge over to you. Thank you very much for your comments there. Also, they've been on the podcast before, so come and listen to that episode, those episodes they joined us on. Chris M, anything you want to say before we say goodbye to the listeners?
I'm a little bit surprised. I genuinely thought this movie, I mean, obviously I knew my scores, but I genuinely thought this movie would maybe rate a little bit higher.
This is not bad. 4.5. What's...
Oh, that's the thing. It's not a bad score. It's a really good score. But you know, like in your mind, when you think about this movie, when a movie is this good and 4.5 seems a little low, you know you've got a truly terrific movie on your hands.
The film directly above this, as it will enter the charts, is 7.
Okay.
So, you know...
Up there with the greats.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like,
it's not a bad score by any stretch of imagination.
It's just how the scores work.
No, they can it is.
Elevate bad films, kick down good films. It's just the magic of the spreadsheet.
I really, truly hope this episode might get some people to kind of think, well, it's on Netflix. Let's go and watch this movie while it is on Netflix, because movies like this...
That's why we exist.
Exactly. Movies like this, they will be on Netflix for a limited period. We don't know, obviously, when it's going to come off Netflix. But while it's on Netflix, anyone listening, if you've not seen it, I implore you to watch this movie. Please get past that barrier of the subtitles, because it is a masterpiece, genuinely.
Chris?
Yeah, I was on the train today thinking a lot about subtitles. And I did think that people who just don't watch films that aren't in the English language, they do miss out on so much great cinema. Like, yeah, I was just like, the films of Almodovar, Wong Kar-wai, Ozu, Sanjit Ray, Fellini, like, there's all these greats. And if you only watch films in English language, you're missing out. And, like, it occurred to me that, like, during the pandemic, I think films with subtitles were really important to me because I couldn't go anywhere. So I was travelling through cinema.
You couldn't go to the library to read normally, could you? So you just...
Yes.
Read on the screen.
I couldn't go to the library because they're all shut, Kobe. So no, I was just reading the screens.
Oh, guys, it's been a pleasure to have you on here talking about Parasite. It's been great to talk about Parasite. Hopefully we'll keep on reviewing it in the years to come and look forward to whatever Director Bong has, because he's got some good chops. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks Bye. For coming on.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes and Rockwood Audio's editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.